hide them, help them.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Extort them, you know. Live from the Mundangerous Coterie in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 141 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're continuing our series on campaign settings and talking about Vampire: The Masquerade. But first, the Rogue Traders entertain a house guest in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign. And later, the Monster Within unleashes the beast in the Character Creation Forge.
So before we get to that, we have the answer to a riddle that we were trying to solve this week.
Last week, you may have noticed that my audio sounded like I was underwater.
It's because you were recording in the bathtub, right?
Yes. I was trying to end it all. I didn't have a toaster handy. I thought the laptop and recording equipment would work. It did not.
Yeah, your death rattle is seriously disappointing.
Yes, the problem has been fixed, so we won't be having that issue again in the future, but probably other issues.
Yeah, so fun with adaptive noise reduction in Adobe Audition, huh?
And loud computer fans.
Right. So what happens is, like, we record silence so that the noise reducer can, you know, kill the background noise and highlight our voices. In order to do that, right, you need to get a baseline. But when we take the baseline, Ishan's computer isn't, like, cooking or anything. So it doesn't really have a fan running. And then, you know, about midway through the episode, the fan starts running as we're doing video sharing and recording and all those other things. And, like, cool, now we've got this weird buzz in the background that the noise reduction is trying to reduce, but it's over reducing it. And then it affects the voice line and blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, bad audio.
See all the editing and all the Googling we do for you?
Yeah,
pretty much every week. Why'd we screw it up this time?
This was a weird problem that we didn't have time to fix in pre.
Hope you enjoy. Move on to next week. All right. So speaking of problems that we should have foreseen but did not, Shane, where are we in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign?
So the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader game played using Dark Heresy 2nd Edition rules by Fantasy Flight Games and on the Dead World Malajack. The Rogue Traders and their two best companies of armsmen have located the Verza House, an ancient obsidian fortress once occupied by the fallen Dark Angel Lord Cypher. And after a restless night, they are greeted the next day by a cloaked figure emerging across the valley. Fearing that the Inquisitor Felicitas had followed you out here and perhaps had realized that you guys found the fortress and didn't call in, you attempt plausible deniability, Ishan.
Oh, yeah. Wait, is her name actually Felicitas?
It is.
Now I'm just going to picture her as, like, Carrie Russell.
Mm-hmm. You should. She's 14.
Yeah, we're worried it's her. So Flair, our psyker, decides to contact her and act like he's been trying to contact her. I was just calling you, in fact. But it turns out it's not her. It's a regular dude who works for our rival rogue trader, Duhon Roth, who is also stuck on this garbage planet with us.
Yes, his name is Major Barrow, and Roth, he explains to you that Roth sent him. You know, if you recall, you guys went one direction, Roth's men went the other direction, you're both looking for this fortress, and you found it. Roth, anticipating that once it was found between the Inquisitor and the Dark Angel, the interrogator chaplain, there would be some sort of betrayal or at least disposal. And
I mean, he wasn't wrong.
Right.
We did know this was out here, so we picked this direction at random.
Right. But his thought is, either way, you're both disposable to them as soon as this fortress is found. So if you guys join together, perhaps you can both get out of this.
Okay. So we shoot the messenger, obviously.
Right. Okay.
No way. Actually, for once, we didn't. For once, we said, that's a good point. We actually fully expected that once we accomplish this, that the Dark Angel's or the Inquisitor or both are just going to murder us so that we can't tell anybody, especially after the Dark Angel was like, let me share a deep, dark secret about us with you.
Right. One that nobody, including the Inquisition, really has any inkling of.
Right. We were like, I don't want to know.
No, I'm telling you, listen up.
Great, we're all dead.
Anyway, so Major Barrow, you know, you guys don't have an idea of what's coming, right? You've got a lot of uncertainty in the future, but he offers you a code phrase that Roth has specified that will signify that you are in agreement the next time you have contact, that you will bury the hatchet and sort of work together. And that code phrase is, for the future of the Imperium.
See, this is a good code phrase because it's supposed to be something that you would never normally say.
Well, no, because for the future of the Imperium is not really, it sounds like an Imperial kind of phrase, but it's usually more like for the Emperor or the Emperor protects or, you know, those kinds of things. The idea of like for the Imperium or for the future of the Imperium, it's a new twist on an old classic.
Yeah. The classic being for the future of us.
Right. For the future of the rogue trader vessel, the His Enduring Light.
For the future of me.
So you guys are still doubtful that this is real, that this isn't some sort of ruse by Roth, and if this is in fact somebody named Major Barrow. But even so, he does appear to be, you know, an officer, a functioning, at least, armsman.
And does he have a bolt pistol?
No, he's got like las weapons.
Oh,
you know, a normal hotshot guy. But he did survive the desert alone for at least a day more than you did.
I guess he can stay. It's not even lootable,
and you're not really like in a position to turn down functioning armsmen at this point.
Well, if he had a bolt pistol, then we would kill him.
Well, so you actually detailed him to Trank, and you were like, "I need you to stay close because I don't trust you.
I'm going to keep my eye on you, but if there's a firefight, you're going to go first."
Right. So Trank begins making his normal inspection rounds of the defenses of the Verza House, and then what happens?
Shots ring out from the upper casements of the fortress. I have no idea how that's happening, and we'll find out why next week.
So this week, we are discussing the Vampire the Masquerade campaign setting.
Ah, yes. It is a time of gothic horror and nihilism. It is the 1990s.
Yeah, it is a time of trench coats and katanas. Of everybody dressing like the Crow.
Wait, I don't think the Crow was even out yet. I think trench coats and katanas, that's Highlander, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess kind of.
But, okay, look, if here's the elevator pitch for Vampire the Masquerade, all right? The world is not what it seems. It looks like humanity has subjugated the world, but in actuality, much of society is controlled by creatures of myth and darkness, and most notable among them are vampires. So for thousands of years, vampire elders and the children that they have blessed with undeath have fed on the blood of humans, but they've also warred amongst themselves for power. During the Inquisition, they were driven underground by zealous vampire hunters, and now they must wield their influence from the shadows.
Wait a minute. I've heard this before. This is Anne Rice.
Yeah, this is totally Interview with a Vampire. Absolutely. Okay. Right. That came out in, what, 79? So she had, like, all of the 80s, and The Masquerade came out in 91. Like, this is totally Anne Rice. This is Lost Boys.
Right. And then Aaliyah died, and so did the franchise.
Oh, tragic. You know, you'd think that plane could carry a vampire.
Was she a vampire?
She was the Queen of the Damned. She was the Queen of the Damned.
Yeah, that's right. Queen of the Damned. Yeah, that was the movie.
And what a movie. If this also sounds like Underworld, that is because that is extremely influenced by games like Vampire the Masquerade.
Mm-hmm.
So, like we said, back in 1991... Mark Rainhagen created Vampire the Masquerade. He's also the guy who did Ars Magica, and he worked with one of the guys who worked on Shadowrun to develop the rules of the game in the first place.
Yeah, and then this was the first product in the Storyteller game line, right? That's what they called it?
Yeah, like the system that was much more narratively focused.
Yeah, so it was a move away from combat and dungeon crawling and more towards dramatic interpersonal interaction.
Yeah, and if you think about it, this was a big deal at the time, you know, because we're only, you know, a decade and a half post Dungeons and Dragons, really, you know, so it's not actually that far off of like Monty Hall and like dungeon crawling and gold as XP, where like who cares about a story because you're probably going to die and then rotate a new character in Tomb of Horrors. So Vampyr was the first in the World of Darkness product line. And, this allowed you to play not just as vampires, but also werewolves or wizards or different kinds of golems eventually. You know, you got a bunch of different source books.
Or those aforementioned vampire hunters.
Oh, yeah. Hunter did come out eventually.
Yeah. This was the line of books that were all titled Noun, the Verbing.
Right. Like what? The Masquerade. I don't know what Changeling was. I don't remember that.
Changeling the Dreaming was the first one.
Oh yeah, something like that. There was Protean. There was Werewolf the Apocalypse, right?
Yep. Yeah. And Hunter the Reckoning was the first one.
Oh, totally was. The Ravaging, the Saddening.
Oh, I guess, okay, so technically those aren't verbs, right? They're gerunds.
Yeah, the Running, okay, yes.
Yeah, so don't don't at me. Anyway, so a big line of like loosely connected games in sort of the same world using mechanics that kind of scaled differently based on sort of the power level of a given monster. And vampires basically reign supreme.
Yeah, so the whole setting is called the World of Darkness. Now, we are only focusing on vampire because, I mean, we were like, we can't chew through the whole World of Darkness in like one episode.
No, System Mastery's been doing that for like three Halloweens.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Also, you know, why cannibalize future episodes?
Right, yeah. We got a production schedule to keep.
All right, so it came out in 91. It was won an Origin Award and then revised pretty quickly in 92. There were some changes to the game world, like, oh, the Gangrel left the Camarilla, and like the Camarilla took over New York City from the Sabbat in 1999. But in 2004, the World of Darkness got a massive reboot. Essentially, all of the product lines came to an end, and all of the like end-of-the-world scenarios happened in the storyline, and then they revamped it with the new World of Darkness in 2004. And Vampyr turned into Vampyr the Requiem, which changed a lot of the base assumptions about vampire society. We're not going to talk about that at all, because the Masquerade's cooler.
Yeah, oh. it's got more 90s edge to it.
Oh, yeah, totally. Who wants to play in 2004?
Yeah. And then just, you know, if you're following along with the game line, the fifth edition of the game is currently in development by Kenneth Haidt, who we appreciate for his work on Knights Black Agents. And the alpha is in progress.
Yeah, we'll put a link up to the website. It's actually got a pretty decent grimoire detailing a lot of the information about the different clans and some of the background lore. The art is super 90s.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend you check it out. The shaded illustrations copied from photographs that passes art.
Right.
Pretty sweet.
Art on a budget. Anyway, a little bit bummed that it won't be compatible with Knights Black Agents, but understood that Gumshoe isn't exactly the most natural system for Vampyr anyway.
Do you know anything about what the system is going to be?
I mean, I don't know anything in detail, but I think he's talked a little bit about it on Cardis, about it sort of sticking to the storyteller.
Like five dots?
Yeah, like the dots and dice pools.
Ooh, dots. Wow, all right.
Yeah.
So like we said, go to the website if you want to sign up for the alpha. You can, you'll get a bunch more info. So let's talk about the setting where you play Vampyr the Masquerade games.
Okay, so it's like Shadowrun or Harry Potter in that human society continues to exist roughly as we know it in the real world, but there's this huge conspiracy that keeps all of this underworld darkness stuff hidden.
Right. So it's modern day. Right, whatever you want to call modern day. Like, I think like the Matrix, where like 1999 is modern day, and like there's cell phones, but I don't know that you really get into like extremely high tech or like artificial intelligence or things like that.
Right.
Like Shadowrun, does Vampyre have the veil where like if people, like normal humans, see crazy supernatural stuff, they're like, ah, it didn't happen.
No, it has the masquerade.
Which is vampires murder people who see stuff.
Right.
Okay, so in the past, vampires once lived and killed openly, or at least more openly, until humans finally really started fighting back during the Spanish Inquisition. So in order to protect themselves, a bunch of European vampire clans formed the Camarilla, which is a loose confederation of the different bloodlines that governs how vampires behave and treat one another, and enforces a strict code of secrecy that is punishable by the true death. Vampires killing vampires. So if you're playing a vampire game, you are playing as the vampires. And I think this was probably one of the innovations of the system back in the day. Like, you're the quote-unquote bad guy, although you don't have to be the bad guy.
Yeah, you're the quote-unquote anti-hero.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
I'm off to find the villain or the anti-hero. I'll know it when I see it.
So you're probably either recently turned or you're like up to a few hundred years old, because you typically play a character who, you know, is exploring the world, learning new things, and like is really motivated to like get out there and make a name for themselves. You're probably not playing someone who's like 800 or 1,000 years old.
Right. So as a vampire, you're supernaturally powerful. You're very resilient. You have access to disciplines which give you magical abilities that allow you to do, like, you know, crazy, impossible things like shape changing into bats or mind control through your gaze or whatever.
Or sparkle in the daylight?
Yeah, sure. Is that a flaw? That feels like a flaw.
Fortunately, in Vampyre, sunlight kills you.
Right. Yes. Some things are still sacred in this stupid monster is hero fiction.
So in the game, the tension is less about figuring out how to like track down humans that you can feed on, or like fighting people with UV bullets. It's much more focused on the jihad, which is the internal struggle that's going on in vampire society, because different factions have different philosophical outlooks. I compare this actually a lot to Planescape in a way. Like, you live forever, you kind of get bored. The things that ultimately become really important to you are your belief system. So there are a few power players in the setting. The first is the Camarilla, which is the main organization of vampires. It's based in Europe. They're the ones who enforce this masquerade. But in addition to the masquerade, the Camarilla is very focused on enforcing the hierarchy between vampires. So older vampires rule, younger vampires owe fealty, not just to anyone who's older than them, but also their sire, you know, the person who made them a vampire in the first place, also the leaders within your particular clan. And it's all about like paying respect, or like paying a blood tax to people who are older and more powerful than you.
Yeah, if this sounds like the mafia, it's intended to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's even one of the clans is like the Giovannis.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And they came to
it's
power
the Genovese
by, like,
Genovese.
And they like they're in charge because
it's the Gianni Versace's. They're gonna get murdered on FX.
Is the Giovanni Ribisi?
The Giovanni Ribisi's, the Sneaky Pete's. The hero of Boiler Room or something. I don't know. Whatever.
So since you're playing a younger vampire, there's no way to ascend this ladder, really. Or there are very few ways to ascend this ladder, because no one ages out, no one retires, and no one dies.
Yeah, right? So you've kind of got this dynamic of, like, how do you grow in power ahead of your age, right? Like, what can you do within this strict structure of rules in order to, like, undermine the people above you and take their spot?
Yeah, and what does it feel like when, you know, you've been given this gift? Like, oh my God, now you can do anything. You can
it's
like
a curse.
Yes, yes, it is. You can do it. You can like climb walls, and you know, bullets can't kill you. And you know, wow, now the world is wide open. Oh no, actually, it turns out that like I'm a corporate drone.
Right,
this sucks. I'm a corporate drone forever.
All right, so the Camarilla isn't the only group of vampires. There's also the Sabbat, who are sort of the antithesis. Mm-hmm. So they're based in Mexico City, and they hate the masquerade. They think that vampires should just rule the world openly. And rather than having strict roles and having all that kind of structure based on age and hierarchy, they have a structure based on power and accomplishment.
Yeah, if you have proven that you can survive in a world where there are things out to kill you or more powerful vampires who are trying to bring you under their control, great. You should be the one who's ruling.
Right. And they don't have any need for humans, obviously.
Right. So. They eat them and then actually eat them.
Right.
Yeah. They're like even more disdainful. Like, okay.
So, I don't really care how cows structure their society. I'm still putting them in a pen and I'm going to eat them when I need to.
Yeah. Like the Camarilla is like that they call humans kine, right? Which is an old term for cattle. The Sabbat basically just uses swear words.
Right.
So there's also the Anarchs. They're a sect of the Camarilla that wants to make it a lot more egalitarian. So they share some of the same philosophical beliefs as the Sabbat, but they don't share the same methods, and they don't consider themselves separate from the Camarilla. There are a few other factions that are pretty small, but then again, the type of player I think who's drawn to the lone wolf aspect of Vampire in the first place may really want to play someone where like there's only seven people in your bloodline.
Right. So there are 13 clans, and we will not cover all of them, but they're all groups of like related vampires generally believed to have the same single progenitor. And they all represent some aspect of vampire life or society and some sort of like set of abilities that are sort of integral to what that clan is, right? So they all have their own strengths and then as a result, their own weakness.
Yeah, they're related in that obviously vampires don't have children in this world. They sire a child by turning someone.
By right? drinking all their blood, burying them for 3 days, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, all that normal stuff.
Yeah.
Except that it's the sexy version from Interview with a Vampire.
Right, yeah.
Drain them of their blood and then feed them a little bit of your blood. And it's kind of like sex, but it's kind of like having a child. You know, it's kind of incestuous because like that's hot, I guess. Because that's hot.
God. That's why I didn't want to do this episode.
It's probably going to be our most popular one.
All right. So let's hit the highlights of some of these clans. So you've got Toreador, which is sort of entranced with beauty. So they're the emo artists, right? They're Lestat.
Yeah. Sensitive artist. That's them. And their weakness is that sometimes they're so enthralled by beauty that they're kind of paralyzed.
Right.
There's Tremere. They're kind of the wizard vampires. They can use their blood in order to cast some spells.
There's the Nosferatu, who are like...
Yeah, I've heard of them before.
Yeah, I know. That movie was pretty good.
Huh.
But they're like the hidden spies and informants. They're all like... malformed and misshapen, so they're all hideously ugly, much like the film Nosferatu.
They're the Gangrel, who are... I never understood like why they're not just werewolves.
They're the homeless vampires.
Yeah,
they're the street urchin vampires. Like, they just live in the sewer.
And they've got shape-shifting abilities, but it does mean that they are closer to their beast within, which means it's much easier for them to fall to blood frenzy.
Then there's the Ventru, who are the aristocrats or the like kind of the leaders, the tastemakers of vampire society.
They're your elves.
Yeah.
They're your stuffy elves.
Right. They only feed on one kind of vessel.
Yeah, like it needs to be a particular kind of human, right? Like, I only like painters. And actually, I can't drain blood from anyone who's not a painter.
Right.
You call that art?
Well, I mean, a Toreador would.
Yeah, actually, yeah. And then there's the Machavians, who are crazy.
Yeah, everybody needs a chaotic evil enemy, even the anti-heroes.
And they can have, you know, divine or magical insights that no one else, for some reason... could figure out because they just don't have the right perspective, man.
So what are the themes? I mean, we've probably started hinting at them already, but what are some of the themes of a vampire game?
It plays out differently depending on your clan and whether you're affiliated with the Camarilla or the Sabbat, but there is an underlying tension between your own humanity, like what's left of your own humanity as a vampire, and what's called the beast, which is the vampire id within you. And all it wants to do is like kill and feed and like bathe in blood, and not, you know, bathing in blood and like blood orgies and stuff is like par for the course.
Yeah.
But the beast is like, I want to rip things limb from limb. And because in this game, in this setting, vampirism is a curse from God, like the Judeo-Christian God, and it separates the vampire from their humanity. So if you commit particularly evil or like vicious, violent acts, it brings out the beast. And if you lose control, you end up in a blood frenzy, which means you basically become an NPC for a time. The storyteller says, hey, here are the terrible things that you did, and here's how you destroyed things that you love.
Right.
Sucks for you.
Yep.
So you spend a lot of time trying to decide, you know, how do you slake these urges that you have, but at the same time trying to make sure that you don't do too much damage to, you know, loved ones you had while you were still mortal, who you still care about even though you're a vampire, or other vampires, or, you know, your own political machinations.
There's also a heavy emphasis on interpersonal interactions. So your relationship to the other PCs depends on your clan affiliation, your philosophical outlook, your age. If you have a party that's comprised of like different clans, then you've got to, you know, kind of figure out, why are you working together and how are you going to work together? How are you going to like marry all of those ideas together in a way that's constructive?
Yeah, I think that's one of the sort of biggest issues that you kind of ran into when you were playing the actual like Vampire the Masquerade game was, oh, right, there's 13 different clans and like, I want to be Sabbat. Yeah, I want to be Camarilla. This is awesome. And wait, why are we working together?
Right.
Why are we even in a party?
Yep. Yeah, it's like the only game where having multiple classes in the party makes it hard to justify being a party.
Yeah. On the flip side, if you do all decide to, you know, come from the same clan, it would make sense that you would be traveling in a coterie together. But then, of course, you've got to deal with, where do you stand in relation to one another? Is it possible that one of you is the sire of another one? Like, did one of you make another one a vampire in the first place? Do you have a blood bond? Is like a pseudo-sexual blood trading thing that, you know, commits a vampire to like aid another vampire? Are you all planning a coup? Are none of you planning a coup? Is one of you planning a coup?
I mean, yes.
Yes, the answer should be yes. I don't know why it wouldn't be yes.
But even within that, right? Like even as you're trying to make your mark on vampire society, right? You have to deal with the sort of imbalance of favoritism from elders or sort of first standing within a clan. All those types of like social dynamic play in as well.
Mm-hmm. And then I think probably the main reason that a bunch of people played in the 90s in the first place.
The main reason that we don't.
is that the Masquerade has deeply ingrained themes of gothic horror and sensuality. I mean, it took a lot from Ravenloft in the first place, and I think 5e actually has done a pretty good job of like dialing those back up,
recapturing
that. Yeah, and talking with like Curse of Strahd and things like that. But, you know, the vampires are undead, but they often feel human emotions more strongly in some ways. They can experience certain kinds of pleasures that would actually kill a person. The setting really plays up the sexual nature of the embrace. Or a lot of other things, honestly. Like, if you're playing a Toreador, probably everything is sexual.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this is a theme that played heavily into its popularity for LARPs, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It was an excuse to talk to girls without having to talk to girls as yourself.
Right. I'm going to put on a glamour.
Right.
I'm going to hold up a mask in front of my face, literally. This is my glamour.
Okay, listen, I don't care if I normally dress like an idiot. I'm dressed like a vampire now.
A sexy vampire.
Right. You can see it right here on my card.
That, yes, it says sex. It says not Nosferatu.
It says four dots, Toreador.
yeah, this is, you want to play Queen of the Damned and not Underworld.
Right, yeah. So actually, True Blood is a nice blend of the two, right?
Fair, yep.
Beyond that, there's also a strong theme of political maneuvering, right? It's not a coincidence that it's modeled after sort of a mafia, old Italian sort of Machiavellian society.
Yeah, you're dealing with the people in charge who've been around for thousands of years and they've got no desire to step down. So sometimes the only way to get rid of them is to kill them, which I think canonically two clans have actually murdered their founders and then renamed the clans after themselves.
Nice. There is also a search for enlightenment. So given that vampires are undead, cannot die, they have eternity ahead of them. So what do you do with that time knowing that you'll still be here in 5,000 years, right? Like, what is your end game?
Yeah, so the setting posits this sort of secret path called Golconda. It's like a vampire nirvana. Your humanity wins out over your beast, or maybe, according to some legends, your humanity is in balance with your beast, depending on who you ask about it. Most people don't know about it. The Camarilla actually suppresses all information about it. I'm not really sure. It reminds me of one of those old... like one of the later Highlander movies when like some of the immortals sort of remove themselves from society.
Wait a minute. Can you please explain what a later Highlander movie is?
Like Highlander 4.
There's a fourth Highlander?
There is. When the guy from the movies and the guy from the TV show
there's
get together.
There's a TV show?
There's totally a TV show.
Who was watching this?
Wasn't it was it Lorenzo Lamas? No, it was Adrian Paul. He just looks like Lorenzo Lamas.
There's an actor named Adrian Paul?
Yeah. It totally is.
Did this run like on the same night as like Hercules and Xena?
Yeah, and maybe a little earlier. I think it ran at the same time, or maybe in a block with like Beauty and the Beast with Linda Hamilton.
That was a TV show. What is going on?
You didn't watch any like late 80s USA, did you?
I clearly was too busy watching Nickelodeon. Wait, so this competed with MacGyver? What the hell?
Nothing competed with MacGyver. Okay,
well,
good sir.
Well, fair.
I think it owned its time slot, especially when he went back in time to the Middle Ages and discovered his first name.
So, like, this network went from Tour of Duty to, like, Highlander to...
Burn Notice.
Well,
and what,
to
Suits?
To MacGyver to then Burn Notice and Suits, yeah. Great. Characters welcome. Sort of.
Okay, there's also pretty strong themes of Christian mysticism if you want to dive into those. So canonically, Cain, like from the Bible, was like the first vampire.
Of Cain and Abel.
Yeah. And he was the mark of Cain, right? The curse that God levied on him after he killed Abel is vampirism. Oh, imagine that. So there's a ton of like in-setting biblical apocrypha that you can dive into, like the first city was created by Cain and was populated by vampires and then destroyed in Noah's flood, which is why the 13 progenitors of the 13 clans are called the Antediluvians, because they were alive before the flood and survived it because they can't drown.
Right. Yeah, that seemed like a big miss on God's part.
Yeah, he's got a lot of failings.
Right. His Old Testament God was not so great.
Bad aim.
Yeah.
I want to punish one person for one thing.
A lot of collateral damage.
Right. I'm just going to smite a whole town.
No wonder he had to apologize.
But I made you a pretty rainbow.
Anyway, there's also sort of a prophecy within the Camarilla around Cain returning to bring judgment on vampires, sort of their own vampire revelation.
Yeah, and this is something that you can like take or leave, because like it's supposed to be a secret. I kind of think of it like Raiders of the Lost Ark or The Last Crusade, right? Canonically, like there's that biblical stuff in there, right? The Ark of the Covenant exists. If you look at the face of like the Holy Spirit, your face melts. Mm-hmm. Like the Holy Grail exists, that kind of stuff. It can exist at that level, right? Like, oh yeah, we're descended from Cain, but like who knows if anything else in the Bible is true,
right? Or it can exist as like literal plot hooks that you are chasing down and trying to discover about vampires to use for your own benefit.
Well, speaking of those plot hooks, Shane, let's dig through a few of them. If you want to play a vampire game, what are some interesting fun hooks you can hang a session on?
How about damage control? So you've got a friend, maybe a member of the party, a PC who has broken the masquerade, revealed themselves to a human or embraced them without permission, and they come to the party for help. So what do? Do you turn them in?
Because you should turn them in. That's what you're supposed to be doing.
Do you kill their child? Do you hide them, help them, extort them? You know, vampire stuff.
Yeah, I think you killed the child in a sexy way.
Okay, let's be clear. Whatever we're doing in Vampire, we're doing it in a sexy way.
Oh, yeah, you extort them in a sexy way. Right. That's actually how I usually say it, right?
Yeah.
I extort, but sexily. See, it says it on my card.
Yeah, four dots. Sextortion. Which is not a crime. Just want to be clear here. It's just a sexy way of extorting things. Keep my beast in check.
Check your beast. I like turning the tables. You can have the hunter become the hunted. Because, you know, there is the game line Hunter, right, where you're playing vampire hunters in mm-hmm. World of Darkness.
Right.
So maybe the hunters are on the hunt, but they're new to this city. And so you're not supposed to be breaking the masquerade, right? It's probably not a good idea to just show up and, you know, murder eight people in a room and then, like, let the local detectives try to figure it out and not notice claw marks and fang marks. So maybe instead you are tasked with infiltrating the group in a sexy way, obviously.
Well, naturally.
Well, yeah, duh. And, you know, finding a way to turn them into a pawn of your clan. Obviously, they're not going to know that they're a pawn of your clan, but this is essentially what the vampires do all the time, right? Is they use money and influence and lies and obfuscation to make people who don't know anything about vampires serve the cause of vampires.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the way that you're going to do this is by letting yourself get caught, then talking them into, you know, feeding them information about your own enemies so that they go and become useful to you. You know, I mean, it's like just basic vampire stuff. Also do it sexy.
Yeah, yeah. And do it at night.
Well, naturally. And either in a trench coat or a corset, your choice.
As long as you have your katana.
You can also do a blood hunt. So, you know, you might need to hunt down a fellow vampire on the order of the prince of the city you're in. But when that vampire is dead, you discover documents that allude to the location of your clan's antediluvian. You know, maybe they are a few steps ahead of you on that plot hook. So it's apparent that the blood hunt was meant to keep the information quiet, and now you have it. So what do you do?
It sounds very familiar. It's almost like a dark angel was like, hey, let me tell you deep, deep, dark, dark secrets. Yeah, the antediluvian plot hook is always interesting because some clans like really revere their founder and some really hate their founder. And so it really depends on which clan you're in, whether this is good news or bad news. And I think adjacent to this, you can also run a nice little treasure map arc. You know, you've somehow find some evidence about how to reach Golconda.
I mean, obviously the way to reach Golconda is not to follow a treasure map. But yeah, sure, if you need a treasure map to get started down the path to enlightenment.
It's a series of clues, like an Easter egg hunt on the back of the Declaration of Independence.
A sexy Easter egg hunt?
Is there any other kind? Look at that cottontail. And Nicolas Cage is involved, obviously. Look, if anyone can get into the National Archives and steal the Declaration of Independence, it's vampires.
Right.
I think canonically, Nicolas Cage was fighting vampires. Wait, has he been in a movie where he fights vampires? I find it strange if he is not.
Did Ghost Rider not fight vampires?
Probably.
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Neither did I.
Anyway.
Was he not in John Carpenter's Vampires?
So back to the treasure map. You know, you can use this sort of thing to feed rumors or enticements about Golconda and sort of pull your players into interesting directions. So, you know, all of the restrictions that vampires have as undead, as you know, cursed vampires, like the inability to walk in the light or having to deal with a beast, right? Like Golconda would be promises to alleviate all of those concerns.
Yeah, so even if you have players in the party who are totally unconcerned with like the philosophical aspects of Golconda, the power that could be gained by actually achieving this state, I think is a good hook for everybody.
And super sexy.
The sexiest.
I don't actually know how, but whatever.
It's in the way that you walk.
It's true.
You got to sway yes. properly.
Maintain eye contact. You know.
You can also play a much more traditional type of game. Maybe it's just the Purge. You remember, there's a lot of infighting among vampires, and it's not just maneuvering. Sometimes you are murdering other vampires. So maybe the Sabbat or the Camarilla, depending on which side you're on, attacks the city that you're in force. And so in response, the prince of your city declares martial law. So your task is survive the night.
Yeah.
That's really about it. And of course, make sure that you protect things that you actually value or still love.
Right. And then also, you know, keep it sexy. So normally we talk about adapting to other systems. So despite the fact that Vampire has years ingrained in the Storyteller World of Darkness system, right? What are some other ways that you could take the themes or take the setting of Vampire and play it?
I mean, I think even people who really love World of Darkness can admit that it's not the best system mechanics, because it has a, I think it has a speed stat, right? So,
well,
you just pump your speed stat and take all the actions.
It's one of those weird games where combat is not the highlight, yet every ability has combat.
Yeah, and one of those things where like the better you are at something, the more chance you have to totally fumble.
Right.
Yeah, but anyway, so I think this actually can work really well in a superhero system. I mean, we've talked before about how there aren't really great superhero systems out there, but if you have one that you love, the way that vampires play in World of Darkness is they are essentially people with superpowers. Gravity-defying abilities and like extreme toughness, and you know, they dish out a ton of damage. They have mind control abilities, and these are all things that are pretty much covered in your typical superhero package. I mean, typically you'll ignore things like you know, shooting laser beams out of your eyes.
Yeah,
but I mean, a lot of the rest of the Superman package like is totally doable.
Yeah, I mean, except for the super sexy.
Someone's got to have the Purple Man. He's got the ability of super sexy, right? Isn't that basically his ability? Is pheromones?
That's a. I'm learning so much.
it's the bad guy from Jessica Jones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. The reason I quit watching Jessica Jones. Perfect. Yeah. You can also pull Vampire into D&D if you give everybody like a monster template instead of a race. You know, kind of starting with a level adjustment, and also maybe at a mid-tier level, you can play as vampires pretty easily.
Yeah, I'm thinking of in Tomb of Annihilation, the 5e adventure path, one of the guides you can get at the very beginning of the game is actually a secret like weird tiger. So like she just is a weird tiger, right? She has the weird tiger template. She's got like a bunch of hit points and a bunch of resistances, and you know, she's an NPC, but they just sort of expect you to like walk around the jungle with her. So you know, just make everyone a weird tiger or whatever, you know? I don't know that you'd necessarily give them like a CR15 vampires to start out with, but maybe. Yeah. I mean, because the party's balanced, so who cares?
Right. As always, we like to recommend Genesis because it gives you a lot of flexibility for custom rules, and we like the narrative dice, especially in a game that is largely driven by social interaction.
Yeah, and it means that you can, you know, you can have those great succeed at a cost or fail but with some success results that I think work well in like a 90s type, like never, nothing ever really fully works out for you,
right?
Kind of WB the CW. I guess it was WB back then, right?
It was the WB, and I know that.
Right, it's like a more Buffy the Vampire Slayer type game.
Wasn't that
the vampires?
Wasn't that on Fox?
I have no idea. Angel, right? You're playing Angel.
Wasn't that on the same network as Buffy?
Didn't it switch? UPN. Was it UPN? No. What was Charmed on?
TNT.
I don't think that's true.
The reruns definitely are. My gym plays basketball at night, which is on TNT a lot of times. So sometimes TNT is still on in the morning. Charmed is definitely rerunning on TNT every morning.
I mean, I wouldn't get any work done at the gym. Okay. Oh my God, she's dating the source of all evil again.
Anyway, so any type of narratively focused or diceless system can also be really good for freeform play. I think drama system would be a really interesting attempt or hack for this. It's a game written by Robin D. Laws. And then also keep in mind that Vampire gets adapted for LARPs all the time. So there's lots of LARP systems or like lightened versions of even the storyteller system that people use for that.
Yeah, I think System Mastery actually has a review of Mind's Eye, which is a LARP put out by White Wolf specifically.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure it's terrible, but you can check it out.
Yeah, I mean, LARPing isn't really our game, so I don't know.
But also, I think it was put out in the 90s by White Wolf, so it's probably a bad
system. So it's also not our game.
Yeah. All right, so as we ask every installment of this series, Shane, would you play in the Vampire the Masquerade world?
I am less enthralled with playing the monster. That's not really like where my interests lie.
You prefer to play the human who is just a monster.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Chaotic, like, neutral.
That whole, yeah, no, but that whole like kind of like gothic horror like doesn't do a whole lot for me, so I don't think I'd be as interested in playing vampire. I have played hunter, hunting vampires, and I very much enjoyed playing hunter, so I would be close to playing, but I don't know that I necessarily would like go out of my way to play. How about you?
I think I'm more keen on vampire lore. Okay, so I like almost any type of vampire, I guess, except maybe Twilight, but that's just because the writing is terrible. I like John Carpenter's vampires.
Well, that's because Twilight isn't even really vampires.
Yeah, it's true. They don't do anything that vampires do.
Right.
I like, Strahd vampire lore. I like The World is a Vampire.
Good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's also very 90s.
Yeah, few things are more 90s than Smashing Pumpkins.
And, you know, as a new young vampire chafing against the masquerade, right, you're just thinking, despite all this rage.
Does a vampire think of themselves as a rat ever? I guess if you're a gangrel, you could turn into a rat.
Yeah.
That'd be right in
there.
You go.
Yeah. It turns out, Smashing Pumpkins, all gangrel. We were right. We were right. That's why Billy Corgan was shaving his head. He had lice.
Okay. There's a James Iha joke in here somewhere.
So I would be much...
Wait, no, was it Jimmy Chamberlain was the one who died, right?
I don't remember. I was too sad in the 90s to pay attention.
Okay. Pretty sure that's true.
I think you're right. So I would be much more likely to play like an Underworld type game than, say, a Queen of the Damned type game. Simply because I am of an age where my sensual and emotionally important experiences tend not to happen at the game table.
That's okay. Yeah. That's a really good point. Like so I do like games with political intrigue, with like social maneuvering. But the overlay of like sexuality into that, and like sort of that like forbidden lust sense of vampirism is of zero appeal. So like for me, like that piece of vampire is too present, and like I feel like I wouldn't really be playing vampire correctly if I totally ignored it, but I also want to totally ignore it.
Yeah, I think you get into a situation where, okay, like most of our game group is like, we're married and, you know, like we have decades of experience of you know, like romantic relationships. And I just feel like the veil, like the little X card would come out so often.
Yeah.
That it would just interrupt the gameplay all the time.
Or we would like play it to slapstick, right? Like it would be so
like we
so,
do with everything.
Right. But it would be so overwrought and like over the top because we don't want to imitate real life that like it just, again, it wouldn't be true to the setting, really.
Mm. But I also really, really like the Christian mysticism stuff because I used to be quite religious way back in the day. And I think it would be cool to play a version of it where you're sort of really diving into the philosophical differences. Maybe like older vampires who have sort of gotten over the like hedonism of the first 8 decades.
Okay.
And you're like, okay, I did all that. You know what's really important now is like securing my legacy and figuring out where we stand. And like, is Cain coming back? And if he is, that means we're all going to die. Like, die.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I could get into that. I could also really get into just merging this with like Knights Black agents playing like government operatives infiltrating the Camarilla, or trying to like exert their, who understand it and are trying to exert their control over it.
Yeah, I can see that. I could also be interested in like a vampire who doesn't necessarily understand the full extent of their own abilities. Like, so we played a Knights Black agents game where we our task was to figure out what the vampire's abilities are, right? It was like, okay, we had heard a legend about anyone who hears a bell that the vampire rings dies, you know, and that was being merged with audio technology,
mm-hmm.
you know, in order to like essentially create like a weapon of mass destruction.
Right.
But it, when we actually figured out what was going on, it wasn't exactly that.
The bell was right. Just sort of the precursor to the vampire tech.
Right.
Which we stumbled right into.
But I think it could be cool to play it from the vampire side where they don't necessarily know the specifics of like the magic surrounding their abilities. They just know like, I do this and this happens. I do this and this happens. And you're sort of going up against government agents who also have like, actually probably have bigger, more resources than you do,
mm-hmm.
you know, because one problem with vampire society is you're sort of still stuck in the Middle Ages.
Right. Okay. So I think the answer is we would play it, but not...
with you.
In the book.
In the bathtub. I played in the bathtub.
Right. Alone. In my head. Do you hear that, Ishan?
Ah, is it the bell tolling? Yes, because you're dead now. Sorry.
Okay. Well, great.
You can't talk, you're dead. This isn't Calvin Ball. There are rules.
All right, I'm rolling up a new character. Let's move on to the character creation for
a deaf one. Okay, because that's OP.
All right, before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrillCast.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at TotalPartyThrill.
All right, so this week in the Character Creation Forge, we are building the Monster Within.
You know, in case you want to play something that freaks out, hulks out, hides out, H-Y-D-E.
Wakes up bathed in blood and wondering what happened.
Whoops.
So what is the Monster Within?
It is Kensei Monk 14, Berserker Barbarian 6.
So Kensei Monk, that's the one with the big sword, right?
It can be, although I think you may just want to play with a little dagger.
With a little, lots of little swords, got it.
Oh, yeah, so many, spiked chain.
Okay.
So for Monk, you're going to get armored defense, you get a nice little speed boost. One of the problems we have with multiclassing Monk is that you lose a bunch of abilities if you're wearing armor or a shield, but you are a barbarian, and so no armor is necessary.
Yeah, you only lose your other unarmored ability.
You'll be able to make an unarmed attack as a bonus action using your martial arts ability. You get flurry of blows, and yeah, you get to pick kensei weapons. And you get a nice little AC boost if you use your attack action to make an unarmed attack from Agile Parry.
You also get the usual monk things that we like deflect arrow, slow fall, extra attack, stunning fist, the defensive abilities, evasion, stillness of mind, immunity to poison and disease.
And I think if you're playing this as a vampire character, then these are essentially the things that you'd be getting anyway, right? Like, vampires are preternaturally dexterous. You know, they dodge out of the way in ways that human beings shouldn't be able to. They're very hard to mind control. Obviously, poison doesn't affect them.
Right.
At level 11, you'll get Sharpen the Blade, which basically just lets you have a +3 weapon all of the time.
And then at 14, you get Diamond Soul, which gives you proficiency in all saves. Again, making vampires very hard to affect.
Now, Barbarian, the only things you need to keep in mind are some of these abilities only work with strength attacks. But for the most part, you can use your monk abilities with strength if you want. I think what I would do is when you like rage out, when the beast awakens, I would switch from using dex to using strength attacks. But you do get reckless attack, which lets you roll with advantage. So even if your strength isn't that high, you have a good chance of hitting, plus you've got sharpen the blade and you're probably rocking a +3 weapon in your hand. You do get unarmored defense, but I believe according to Raw, you only get to keep whichever one you get first, right?
No, you pick which formula you want.
Oh, well, that's better.
You only get one formula.
Fortunately, your speed boost stacks, though, so you're super fast like a vampire is supposed to be.
Yep. You can actually make an extra attack as a bonus action as a barbarian with a berserker ability. So if you're using a bigger blade, you can use that as your extra attack.
You'll get damage resistance while you're raging up to 4 times per day. And when by level 6, you'll get Mindless Rage, which will make you straight up immune to charm and fear effects.
So, Ishan, who is your monster within?
My monster within is a scholar. She obviously is well-trained, two-fisted, perhaps. But on a dig or while researching a dusty tome, she came across an entity that in another character perhaps would have offered a deal, or she would have said, you know what I want? I want power, and so let's make a pact. But she did not. Instead, she said, I will resist you. I want no part of your evil ways. And instead, the spirit said, well then.
Challenge accepted.
I'm going to live inside you. We're going to hang out. And I think you're going to get used to me. We're going to enjoy this partnership.
So this is like a zombie Durkan.
Yeah, there you go. Except that sometimes the zombie goes away.
Right.
she maintains all of her other abilities. I mean, this is why we didn't go like, you know, wizard barbarian, right? Because when the monster is unleashed, these kinds of characters tend to actually be more powerful, right? You don't lose abilities. You maintain all of your others, even if you don't maintain your mental faculties,
right,
necessarily.
Yep.
So she's still got all of the monk abilities where she can still punch through a wall or through a chest cavity and, you know, dodge fireballs with the best of them. But she also just happens to get super strong and able to, you know, knock down buildings. And so she channels this. She knows she can't get rid of this this passenger who's decided to hitch a ride. So she instead says, all right, sometimes I'm going to use you. And I'm going to let you out only when I find you useful. Like, for example, I'm surrounded by reavers and all of my friends are behind a locked door.
This sounds like a gorilla song.
So yeah, there you go. She is her own secret weapon. Shane, what about your monster within?
So my monster within is a, if not a turned vampire, like a half blade. Let's go with blade.
A dampier.
Yeah, like a, you know, a daywalker. But is actually part of the, you know, has suffered from the vampiric embrace, and is seeking the path to Golconda. Unfortunately, the path to Golconda is littered with traps, as it turns out. And so as my monster within sort of advances to the path of enlightenment, accidentally uncovers that like part of the cost of all of that control is that it sometimes must just be fully released, right? Like the attempt to control with perfect discipline also creates this necessary counterforce, and that is that monster that must come out with a violent rage.
So the quote-unquote balance that Golconda promises between humanity and beast is actually
perfect control and absolute loss of control. Yep.
Look, it averages out.
No wonder the Camarilla is trying to bury it. That's a terrible model for balance. All right. Before we wrap up, we want to take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters.
Yeah, your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every week. Man, we do this show every week. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
So what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're talking about insanity and madness.
And in the Character Creation Forge?
We're building the Mind Piercer.
Well, that's it for episode 141 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.